Find this podcast and others like it at the number one new media network, Podshow.com. Better, faster, stronger. And now with new minty fresh scent.
How did I miss that? Was that the news?
It was 6 months ago, maybe.
I must have been drinking wine with Suzanne. Missing all those.
Probably.
Y'all were drinking wine when, about the same time Saddam Hussein got hung. It all happened at the same time.
That same night.
Yeah, that's my excuse for everything.
All that major. You know, when George Bush was elected? Somewhere around there.
Who's George Bush?
I need you to cue me. I like it when you do the round thing.
Ooh.
The DivaCast, number 36. Ooh, I'm a little hot, a little loud. It is 28 February, and hey, everybody, we are the DivaCast. We are five fun, fabulous, 40-something friends, and we all hang out and talk. So come join us. I am Suzanne.
I'm Carrie.
I'm Julie.
And I'm Amy, and we are missing, guess who?
The missing diva.
Sharon. Yeah. She
might pop
stuff.
In, though.
Oh, good.
But...
Well, that's good.
I got it.
Well, we're glad you joined us because we believe inside every woman is a diva, and you can be one too.
Thank you.
And you are. Well, they are.
That's a good thing.
I know.
It is. Hey, just as a reminder, this show is brought to you in part by Folgers, and they have 7 new gourmet flavors. So you can go to our website directly and push on the button and get a free sample.
Cool.
Yeah, very
cool.
Give
it a taste. Today, we're going to be talking about a disturbing trend, and that is cutting. But before we get going on that, I think we just want to put out this disclaimer that the show is for informational and discussion purposes only, and is no way meant to substitute any kind of professional counseling. This show, it could be disturbing to some listeners, and it may be especially triggering for some people who engage in this behavior. We just want to put that out there first. Suzanne has, she actually completed her thesis in this subject, and so we're going to kind of utilize her as our information person here. Suzanne, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is?
Okay, you know what? Because there is such a misconception out there about what exactly is cutting. And first of all, I'd like to say that there are many different terms for it. They're known as cutters, self-mutilation. The most common term, well, for lay people, be cutters, but for professional people, it is really self-injury or self-injurious behavior. And we also just call it SIB. So that's what it's called. It's, you know, what's kind of interesting though, is people who engage in this behavior hate the term self-mutilation because they don't perceive it as that.
Mm-mm.
So I think that's kind of an interesting thing to note.
What do they perceive it as?
Self-injury is okay.
But
yeah.
That's just a heavy term for mutilation,
yeah,
I guess.
It feels really incongruent with what they're doing.
Well, because that's not their purpose.
Exactly.
Their purpose in cutting, and from just what I've seen, the memos or whatever I've seen that go home in the high schools, because it is a trend, and they're sending flyers home, and I hear kids talking about it, and you know, the kids who wear the long sleeves, mm-hmm. we'll get into that because I guess mm-hmm. they cover themselves if
yes.
they're cutters because they tend to cut on their forearms or they always wear jeans because the insides of their thighs were things that they can cover mm-hmm. easily. But I've asked a couple of the kids, why would anybody do that? They always said they just want to feel something. So to me, when you call it a mutilation, that's not their goal, is not to mutilate. It's to feel something or to...
Bingo. That's exactly
so
right.
So that's probably why they don't like that term, because that's not what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
What
so
they, in their mind.
Doing. Yeah.
No, what causes people to do that behavior, though?
Well, that is kind of the million-dollar question. But what the data seem to suggest is that most people who engage in self-injury, 75%, some of the data suggest, have a positive history for sexual abuse.
Is it sexual or physical?
It can be both. But the overwhelming one common denominator is sexual abuse. And I have to say, when I was doing my internship, it was so interesting to me how the universe works, because I ended up getting a very high and disproportionate number of clients who did engage in self-injury. And I just thought that was so interesting because mm-hmm. that was my therapeutic interest and also what I was going to be writing my thesis on. Every single one of my clients who self-injured was positive for sexual abuse history and early on. And
but that's not necessarily an
not
assumption
always.
You should make.
No, never, yeah. never. There are a lot of different reasons, but again, that seems to be the overwhelming reason. And as Julie was saying, they cut or self-injure, and it is an attempt to actually feel something. And what happens with self-injurers is oftentimes if they did grow up in a really kooky environment, and I'm talking extra kooky, I mean, we all have kookiness in our backgrounds, but really kooky where there's a lot of sexual abuse or any sexual abuse, where there's physical abuse, where there's physical neglect.
Majorly dysfunctional, huh?
Yeah, hugely, hugely, you know, really on that tipping the scale of dysfunction. They tend to, those types of clients tend to be so good at dissociating. And do you know what I mean by that term? Like, you know how you can like mentally check out? Well, people who have this history are very, very adept at dissociating. Mm-hmm. And so when they self-injure, like you said, they're desperately trying to feel something.
So because they've just disassociated so much that they're just not emotionally there and they're not sensing things. Is that the thought process there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes they don't even feel until after.
Because they're numb to it.
They are numb. Exactly right. And they feel something after the episode. So after they've engaged in the behavior, then they kind of come back into their bodies and they're like, oh my gosh, I had a client who cut all the way down to her tendons. Ugh.
Well, and I think the word cut is deceiving because you're thinking knife. And from what I heard, and you can correct me, because a lot of them don't even use knives. It's whatever they have. Yes. One girl used a pencil eraser and rubbed it to where it just rubbed her skin raw. Mm. Another girl had a bracelet,
bracelet?
No, the regular, just a clasp.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Bangle kind of deal, but that opens, and had used the edge of it. And so, like, I would think cutting, you got to have a knife. You know what I mean?
Right. But wasn't that, we were talking about that at the retreat, and they were saying that they often, you can correct me too, often use not necessarily sharp things, but more blunt that take a longer time so that they're feeling
more pain.
The pain longer? I don't know.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, that goes down. I don't know how that's all broken down, Carrie. I don't. I know that, I mean, the one client that cut down to her tendons, she was using a broken razor blade.
Here's a question. When you were talking about, that's yucky.
I know. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But it's so prevalent. That's so scary.
I have one of those moments when I was thinking about what I was going to say and didn't really, you know how you do that?
You listen.
Knowledge,
it
just kind of hit me. But I was thinking, like, one of the things that you said is the kookiness, the stuff going on in the household. And I was thinking, well, you know what? There could be families out there who are not so kooky that have a child who is doing this behavior because they may be being sexually abused by someone outside of the family.
Absolutely.
Or, you know what I'm saying?
Oh my gosh.
My point is that I don't want people who have a family and find their child doing this behavior to think, oh my gosh,
there's somebody
do I want to
house.
Report
yes.
this
right.
because it's going to be assumed.
No, that's
just
excellent.
One of the causes.
That's an excellent, excellent point. And it could be that they're being abused by somebody, like you said, that's out of the family. It could be a neighbor or, you know, whatever.
Right,
that's, you absolutely see that.
Well, I know that one of the girls I heard about, she wasn't sexually abused. She was emotionally abused.
Mm-hmm.
And she checked out. She disassociated because she got so tired of being yelled at and screamed at, told she was stupid and yada, 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 that she just totally distanced. And then she started cutting so that she could feel, because she felt nothing.
Yes.
And there was no sexual abuse involved. I mean, so there are other cases, even though that's
absolutely. Again, sexual abuse seems to be, that's the data we know now. Now, mind you, this is a very shameful thing. So people don't come running and get help.
Mm-hmm.
And I get anonymous phone calls from parents. This is really interesting. You know, the church that we all go to, they will give out my home phone number and I will get calls from parents who don't want to say who they are. And they'll say, I have a child who engages in this behavior and I understand you know something about it. Can you help me? Can you refer me?
What kind of advice do you give that person?
You know, again, I'm very, very careful because I'm kind of in a quagmire. I'm not legally their therapist.
Right.
So I'm not seeing them in a professional capacity, but I just really encourage them to go to somebody who can see them professionally.
So they definitely need professional help.
Yes. And then I always try to encourage the whole family to get in because usually the person who engages in this, and most often it's teens, the person who engages in this, it's usually a symptom of a whole family problem. So that child is just acting out again, some of the family dynamics that are going on. So, and I have to say it just in my experience and the research that I've done, I haven't really seen an example of somebody who self-injures that has come from what we would call a healthy family. I haven't seen that. I'm sure
it's got to be out there.
I'm sure it's got to be out there. I just personally have not seen that.
Well, my daughter was telling me about, have you heard the term emo?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't know what that means.
I think it has, it's a short for emotional, or what is it short for?
It's a style is what it is.
I know, but it's
like,
dress
or?
It's these kids that have like the long, yeah, like the black and almost goth sort of.
It's not punk and gothic. It's kind of like a merge between punk and gothic and skateboard-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the guys will wear the Levi's real tight, Levi style.
Girl pants.
Real tight,
right?
To their legs.
Straight legs.
Straight legged pants. And their hair will be dark, usually, and straight, and come down across their eyes. Just very, it's just a style.
I don't know how to explain it.
You can, because we Googled it one day, because I didn't know my student was talking to me.
How do you spell it?
Emo.
E-M-O.
E-M-O. Okay. And you can Google emo, and there comes a whole site that shows you different things they wear, because my student was saying, you know, he's emo. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I don't.
But my daughter was saying that, and I thought it was interesting, that it's almost can be trendy to do this behavior.
Okay.
Good point. She made the point, and I'm not going to just target emos. This is what my daughter said. She's 13, so, you know, take that for what it is. But she was saying that the ones that she's seen have, like, they'll wear bracelets over the cutting marks or whatever, that she thinks it's sort of a trendy thing too. So I don't know.
And I mean,
are some people mimicking it to be
I'm sure
shocking?
Think about, it's kind of like, is it almost attention seeking kind of behavior? And I don't want to put, you know, to go off on that, if that's completely inappropriate or wrong, but think about when we were in high school, in college, and anorexia was such a prevalent issue. And I think that a lot of people toyed with anorexia, you know, they toyed with it. It was almost like a trendy kind of thing. I mean, there's so many people in my college. I mean, you could tell who was anorexic. I mean, you could just kind of.
I think it's like any kind of behavior that draws attention to them.
Yeah, but I mean, let me tell you the difference here. This is a really good point. And Julie, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm just going to tell you the difference. Yes, yes, yes. I understand what you're saying. And it's an excellent question again, because there is some confusion about that. Like, well, you know, but I see kids, sometimes they'll do this in groups. They'll self-injure, and they're, you know, there's a little bit of a, it's kind of like almost a hazing type of ritual. Let me just tell you, I really, really like this definition. Forgive me for reading it, but I really like this. And this comes from a guy, Andrew Levander, and he's out in the Healing House out in L.A. I will leave his name and number and website in our show notes. So you could go to thedivacast.com and check this out. But he is phenomenal in his work. But this is what he says. He said, most researchers agree that self-injury is self-inflicted physical harm. It's severe enough to cause tissue damage. It is done without suicidal intent or intent to attain sexual pleasure. Body markings or modifications that are done as part of a spiritual ritual for ornamentation purposes, generally speaking, are not considered self-injury. So I'm not talking about
Talking about body piercings.
I'm not talking about any kind of tattooing, body piercings, even cutting that's meant to be decorative or attention seeking. Most self-injuries, I'm talking about pathological self-injury, and most people who self-injure, they go to great extremes to hide this. There is huge shame around it.
Right.
So what is that other group of kids that are doing it as a ritual? And it seems like, you know, my son came home from the bus, and he said, yeah, this girl was talking about cutting, and we were just asking her, why would she ever do that? It's just crazy and stuff. But it was just very matter of fact.
But how was the little girl was talking about it?
Yeah.
How old do you think she is?
She was in middle school, so she was between sixth and eighth grade.
It could be a cry for help. It could be, I mean, I'm making huge leaps and guesses here. You know, I don't know.
One of the things that I just toyed around on the internet last night, and one of the things that I thought was interesting, because my maternal first instinct, if I saw my daughter, you know, if I saw this kind of behavior going on, would be to probably pick her up and take her to the closest therapist I could find and try to fix it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they said in this thing is that's something that it's like, to be very, very gentle, and you can speak to this on how you handle it, how you react, because you might shut them down, and they get the sense that you are, you know, disgusted with their behavior, and that they're not going to feel
comfortable opening up to you. Mm-hmm. And so can you just speak to how you would,
yeah,
if you saw this, what,
right, what's the next step?
Not as
you
a,
do.
You know, I mean, I'm disclaimer, but.
Well, hold on just a second. Back mm-hmm. up for a second. And,
sure.
And what do you think the signs parents should look for? Because I know one of the things
good.
In the memo, mm-hmm. like before you get to that part, one of the things that they talked about in this letter that went home was kids who constantly wear long sleeve shirts.
Yes. Even when it's warm. Yeah. When it's mm-hmm. inappropriate dress. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That and a lot of self isolation, you know, so they're spending disproportionate amounts of time by
in
themselves.
Their bedroom,
yes.
Doors.
You know, I have a loved one who engages in this behavior, and signs that I noticed were you see blood around the house. You know, you'll see blood spots that you think, "What? Where is this coming from?" And nobody has said, "Mom, I cut my foot," or
yeah,
something
yeah.
like mm-hmm. that. So if you see razor blades in the trash that might have blood on them, if you see antiseptic supplies, you know, it's, wouldn't it be strange? Think of it like this. Wouldn't it be really, really strange if your kid went out and said, "Mom, I need Band-Aids and rubbing alcohol."
Yeah. Like why?
Yeah. Because even though they're in a dissociative process, when they engage in this behavior, it's very interesting. Most self-injurers prep before they engage in the behavior because they do not want to end up in the ER room.
Wow, that's really...
So they make sure...
So they're cleaning it with alcohol before they do it.
They make sure they have sterile supplies on hand to help themselves after they engage in the behavior.
Wow.
Because especially if they've gone to the ER room even just one time, there is so much shame and horror that the client that I had that cut all the way down to her tendons... it's so poorly misunderstood that the physician who treated her refused to give her any anesthesia because he wanted her to feel what it felt like to suture her up. In other words, it was very punitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said to her, "You're going to understand what this feels like. So you never do this again."
Yeah.
Well, you think, you know, that doesn't stop her.
Right. Right.
You know,
there needs to be more education. About
oh my gosh. And so there's a total lack of also, of empathy. So one of the things, so here's what you look for, Julie. Kids that wear inappropriate clothing that's not fitting to the weather conditions. Kids that don't want to show, not only are they wearing long clothing, but they also, like, they won't get in a bathing suit. And they're very protective of their wounds. Again, kids who would go out and buy any kind of sterile supplies, or if you see any type of blood on their sheets or, you know, things like that. So it's just a red flag. You know, something to investigate further. Again, in the self-isolation thing, they start losing their friends or just, you know, just going more and more into kind of this place of isolation. So those are some real red flags to look for. Okay. And then Carrie, what Carrie was saying. Carrie, will you repeat it again, please? Your question.
I'm just wondering how you would react. What's the best way to react to that when you notice that, yes, my child is in fact doing this?
Okay, let's take a hypothetical. So say you have an adolescent kid and you suspect that something's going on, right? And you say to your son or daughter, "Okay, gosh, you know, I've noticed that I've seen some blood. What's going on?" "Oh, nothing. And then maybe you get a glimpse of a wrist and you ask your child, what's going on? This is something that you do want to handle with kid gloves. And I think, but you also have to handle it with, I'm cold. So I'm kind of like, my hands, I'm like, I'm shivering over here. So one thing.
In the diva den.
But one thing you can ask is you can just look them directly in the eye and go, "You know, I'm wondering, you're not doing this to yourself, are you? Or are you doing this to yourself?" And then just see what...
Maybe saying, are you doing this to yourself is better than "you're not doing this, are you?" Because that seems kind of negative in a way, you know?
Okay. So
you just ask them
and say, "You know, I'm curious about how you got these and are you self-injuring?"
I think it's really important because I've only heard about this in the last year. I mean, I think when you started doing your thesis
mm-hmm.
I was clueless. And I think that if I had not ever heard of it, and I witnessed this, I would be horrified. But
it's a horrifying situation to think somebody can do this to themselves.
I think that once you understand it, and you know what I mean? If once you're educated, then you're not going to have that shocked and horrified response.
Yes.
You're going to be completely freaked out on the inside, but maybe...
I don't know. I'd be freaked.
I know. I'd be freaked out on the inside, like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. But you know, to your kid, it's like you want to be able to have your kid come to you with anything.
But you also want to make sure that... I think it's really that kid needs to know that you care, that that's happening, and that you're calling them on it.
And that
you're not letting them get away with that. And you know what?
Exactly.
You're too important to me for me to let you continue this behavior.
Remember, and they're not doing it, and they're not doing it with suicidal intent. And that's a lot of people confuse
I didn't know that.
Yeah, people think, it's a what we call a parasuicide gesture. It is not that at all. They do not intend to kill themselves. The problem that occurs is that cutters eventually have a very high incident of completing suicide because their pain is so great, their emotional pain, that they just feel a sense of hopelessness. And they have been met with such revulsion, disgust, and horror by not only the medical personnel, but also therapists. This is a very poorly understood problem. Let me just point something out. You know, the Bible that therapists and psychiatrists use is called the DSM. It's called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And right now we're in the 4th edition, text revised. That is what we all use to make diagnoses with. This issue of self-injury is not even referenced in the latest DSM. And it is such a disservice. It is such a disservice.
Why is it not referenced? Because it's so new, there's not been enough research done on it? Or
The data is kind of skimpy out there. The last DSM, I believe, was the 2000. So we don't have it. It's a huge undertaking to do a new DSM.
I just find that odd.
Are there any books that you can recommend?
Yes, there are some fabulous books out there. I will make
put
sure
them on
they're
the website.
Yes, put them on the website. One of the best books that I love, and he has really dedicated his life. He is a psychiatrist. Well, he's a medical doctor first, of course, as any psychiatrist is. But his name is Armando Favaza, and his book is entitled Bodies Under Siege, Understanding Self-Mutilation or Self-Injurious Behavior. I'm not sure, but it will be listed on the website. And it's a must read for anybody who comes face to face with this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So
good. There's literature out there. It's just not.
Yes,
well understood.
Yes,
and it's not diagnosed as it should be.
It is not diagnosed, and again, it's just a poorly understood.
I mean, do you feel like it's been around for a long, long time, and it's just coming?
Yes.
Is cutting been around a long time, or just self-injurious
cutting
behavior?
Cutting is old as the Bible.
Okay.
And what we now considered, it's actually a very, again, in the research that I did, there are inferences made in the Bible where people would self-injure, but that was, again, it wasn't the pathology that we're calling it today. It was more an act of religious rites. Like,
wasn't that in the Da Vinci Code? Didn't that guy like mutilate himself with that ball thing?
Yes.
I read part of the book, but I didn't see the movie. But
I read the book and saw the movie.
The self-flagellation.
Flagellation. What's the word?
No, it's not flagellation.
No.
Wait, what's
that? Would be
it's not flatulent.
Sorry. A little different.
Well, we need a little black humor to lighten things up because it's such a heavy topic.
Yeah.
So all right, Suzanne, some of the information you shared with us really shocked me that I want to share with our listeners. As many as 40% of kids have experimented with self-injury behavior. That's a lot of kids.
Is that
four out of 10.
I know, that is just shocking. And that came, by the way, from a psychiatrist at the Children's Hospital in Denver.
Wow.
That statistic.
What? And then 90% of self-injurers begin cutting as teenagers. So teens is when it really starts.
Teens is when you see it most prevalently. However, we have seen it in children as young as 4 and 5.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Wow. So it's the average age to start is 14 and usually continues increasing. So it increases, the severity increases over
Correct.
Time.
Correct. So self-injury can be a chronic problem. However, even though the data suggests that it seems to taper off into the 20s.
The trend is they start around 14 and then it tapers off into their late 20s.
Do you think they're
Correct?
Getting therapy, or do you think that they're learning to cope
Right.
in a different way as adults?
They're learning to either cope in a different way, or their pathology is manifesting in a different way.
In a different aspect. So they've
because it doesn't go away.
Else.
When they hit 21, they start to drink. No, I'm just kidding.
I laughed a little too hard at that. But it can continue. We see it continue all the way into somebody's elderly.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
What kind of treatment do people seek or require or benefit from?
So you're asking then what seems to work the best?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There are, again, many different schools of thought out there. There is one leading researcher, Marsha Linehan, and she suggests that what we call cognitive behavioral therapy is the best, but I tend to disagree with that. I think you have to address the root of the problem. If you do not address what is going on, the trauma that has happened to the person, then you're just using a Band-Aid. So,
yeah.
But don't you do that in cognitive therapy?
No, not as much. It's change your thinking, change your behavior.
Oh.
You change your cognition and then your behavior will change because it's what you think is what you do type of thought. Mm-hmm. And I think that can give short-term, it relieves short-term symptoms. But to address underlying issues, you really have to get what has happened to this person. What, in other words, this is what Jung said, and this is why I love being a Jungian, is that Jung said, how is the symptom serving the soul? Hmm. How is the symptom serving the soul? And that is how you figure out what's going on with your clients.
Well, because if you don't do that, then they're always going to, even if they're not doing the behavior, they're going to be battling that compulsion to be doing it. You know what
you
I mean?
You are a Jungian and don't even know it. Yeah, no, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that is truly the whole crux of depth psychology, is going very deep and looking inward. So,
oh, yuck.
Amy doesn't want to do that.
That was Amy.
No, it's just, I mean, everybody has baggage in their lives.
Everybody does. Absolutely.
And to go back and dredge up all the, I mean, and I'm it's going only, off on a tangent
but no,
here.
No, remember, but it's only if it's causing you harm today. Right. It's only if it's causing you pathological, if it's manifesting as pathology in your life today, then you need to go up and do some dredging.
But you know what? It's interesting when you do go back and look why you act the way you do is because of.
Well, of course, everything has a reason.
No, but Amy, you know, that's a podcast in itself.
It is.
Just some recent things that we've been talking about, the whole triggering, you know, when somebody reacts to you in a certain way, it triggers this response.
It's a lot of your own baggage.
Yeah. Right. And you have to look and go, wait a second, where's that coming from? I mean, I've done a couple of those little introspections lately, you know, and
well, we all do. The reason you react is because of something. You're conditioned that way.
Right.
And
right.
Why you do this and why you do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's another podcast.
It's fascinating. It really is.
I don't want to analyze me anymore. I'm done.
I know. It's why I like analyzing everyone else.
Yeah, I hear you.
I didn't get paid for
well,
it.
Well, I think it'd be neat to hear from the listeners either on the forum or email or voicemail if anybody has any more interest in this at some point.
And I just want to say again about this, one of the facts is that, just as a general information out there, it does cross all socioeconomic statuses. So this isn't something that you see in lower income families. You see this across the board, all incomes, all races. It does tend to be more prevalent in women. Mm-hmm. However, who tends to get sexually abused more? It's women. I mean, statistically, it's 1 out of 4 women will at some point experience sexual abuse before the age of 21, and it's 1 in 7 boys. So it's pretty prevalent out there, but it can be seen anywhere. And so if you do interface with somebody who engages in this behavior, just react with an abundance of compassion, because it's the only way they know how to express their wounding.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Very heavy.
Okay, I'm exhausted.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I know.
And hopefully it's enlightening to a lot of folks out there, because it's definitely enlightening to me.
Well, and it's definitely a problem. I mean, I was shocked when I was at work and I get the
flyers
memo. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
It freaks me out.
That's going to freak out a lot of parents coming home if they're not familiar with it.
Exactly. You know? And I had only heard of it because of Suzanne, you know, so then for me to get a flyer and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know what I mean? Because I thought, oh yeah, okay, I've heard it.
You know what I was thinking about with the DivaCast? That it might be kind of a cool thing to inform our school board about both the child obesity podcast and this podcast, that if parents wanted more information, I don't know if they'd be open to it. You can only go to those two podcasts, because don't go to sex ed.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Maybe not. Never mind.
I don't know about that.
I've been referencing my thesis, and my husband and I, as you guys know, have a different podcast, Insight Works, and my husband and I did an interview style format where, again, if somebody wants more information, you can go to www.insightworks.com, and that's INSYTWORKS.com. for more information. So just so people know they have resources out there and you're not left hanging.
And the books will be on the
screen. Yeah, those books sound like they'll be
We would love to hear from everybody, though. You know, you can always go to our website. We'd love to hear from you, thedivacast.com, and it's all squished together, no spaces. You can email us at diva@thedivacast.com, and you can leave us a voicemail, 678-884-0524. And make sure you subscribe to our podcast. It's free. It's very free. And we'd
It's very free.
It's not just free. It's very free.
Very, very free.
And we'd also like to thank Marie Claire because they help sponsor our show. And you can check them out on themasthead.podshow.com. Really cool video about their magazine.
We're also partially sponsored by Splenda. And you can go to destinationflavors.com and leave your comments and learn more about all their different flavors as well.
And you can get there from our website. Our website is a wealth of information.
Yes, it is. Hey, you guys, we have 22 reviews on iTunes.
Yay!
So we are, I know, 50 by 50. What's this show, 35, did you say?
We have 15
this
more
is,
shows.
This was show number 36.
36.
14.
And I am kind of, I think it's interesting that we've got some men who like our show. I think that's cool. One of the guys said that we remind him of his sisters. But I did want to say... Two things, bear with me. One thing I wanted to just share some feedback from Jody, who was not overly thrilled with our podcast on Dave Ramsey's book. And so she thought we were a little blasé. And
because I wasn't here.
So we just want to put a little apology out there if that wasn't the best of podcasts. I wanted to say also sorry to Anita because she said she loves our show. The only complaint is she said stop saying negative things about being 50 because her friends are 40 to 50 and they're fabulous.
Excellent.
You know, that's a good,
good reminder.
Okay.
Good
and one
point.
Other thing, Ima wanted to see photos of us with our names because she's trying to figure out who's who.
You have to guess.
No, listen. Well, interestingly enough, thanks to one of our other listeners, Michelle, she's helping us out with a new...
Our new logo.
No, she's the banner on our website that's going to have our pictures with our name. But if you want to see specifically, when you go to our website, go to press, and then you can click on our media slick, and on there it has our group, our individual pictures with our names and our bios. So check it out.
Yeah, that's a cool
50
place.
By 50, guys. Come on, we love
you.
Yeah, thank
come on.
You.
This was show number 37.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, only 13
uh-oh.
More.
Uh-oh.
Pressure's on now. We're in big trouble.
Yeah. Hey, you guys, I wanted to have you listen to one of our voicemails from Rochelle.
Hi, this is Rochelle from Phoenix, and I had to tell you how much I enjoy your podcast, and the Steinmart story was excellent. I love it. I think I bought everything at Nordstrom from now on. It makes my day at work being able to listen to you guys, and it's great that you kind of go from subject to subject because that's how women are when we all get together with a glass of wine and talk. Anyway, keep up the good work. You guys are great. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Aww. Nice. Kisses to you, nice. Rochelle.
It's nice to hear a voice instead of just seeing it in print. So anybody else, give us a call.
Yeah, we love to hear the other phone line ring.
Yeah,
instead of hearing us all the time.
Let's hear from you.
We should have a listener podcast. Let them call in. And
that's a great idea.
As long as they're very nice. Anyway, go ahead.
We also want to thank Natalie Brown for our opening music, I Am the Queen of Me. And you guys can go to the website and download her song for free. We're also going to close now with some Podsafe music. It's called I Do, a song that Rob Coslow wrote for his wife. So take a listen, see what you think.
Aww.
Very sweet. Very sweet.
Amy, you didn't give up wine for Lent, did you?
Gosh. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
See you next time.
Have a great day. Thank you.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.